Hey, filmmakers, welcome back to the Film Aspire podcast. This is Herschel Zond, and I am excited about today because a few years ago, actually on my 30th birthday, I did a podcast, and I started a tradition that was the annual birthday podcast. And then, you know, we did it the next year, and it was great, and then after the next year, I stopped. So it's been a while. Today is my 35th birthday, and I am giving myself a present. And I'm giving you a present that I'm going to be like the Hobbit, okay? I'm going to give presents on my birthday because my gift to you and to myself is to get to interview this amazing man sitting right here with me, Mr. Antonio Pantoa. Say hello.
Oh, hello. And Herschel not only gave his presents, but he's giving his presence too. He's actually here in the flesh. So that's awesome that he's given us that. Thank you, Herschel.
Thank you. Your birthday. Thank you. Yes. So, just worked with Antonio on an incredible project called One Must Fall, and he's going to talk all a little about that. But, you know, and I could go on and on about, you know, you get an email from Antonio, you see about 75,000 laurels at the bottom of the email that tells you about how amazing he is. And he'll never tell you himself, but he is amazing in all the things that he tries to do, and he succeeds in all of them. Yeah. And he's sitting here shaking his head because, you know, the most self-effacing man I've ever met, but I just have nothing but mad respect for you, especially after working with you. But for those people, because we are heard all over the world, tell us a little bit about you. Tell me about Antonio.
I'm just a dad, you know, I'm just a dad. That's pretty much it. That's what I do, number one. I have two daughters. I don't have as much boom in my voice as Herschel has, so I'm going to move a little closer to the microphone.
Absolutely.
But that's all I am. I'm just a dad, man. I don't have much to say about myself. Herschel said that I win a lot, but however, that's completely untrue because actually I lose a lot, like a whole lot. So, and that's the things that people don't usually see, you know, they see the wins and stuff like that, but I've lost a lot more than I've won, you know, but I like to compete, win or lose. And I do, I lose a lot, man. I think that, you know,
just you like definitely being get in that the out game. There.
I do, man. I like to be motivated by something. And sometimes I think, it's ironic that like negative energy, I think, motivates me even more. Like if somebody, like sometimes I deliberately show people things that I know are not going to like it. And, or people who say that I can't do something that motivates me even more. So like losing to me is better than winning.
So I can totally see that. Yeah. Now the kind of focus of the podcast right now is, you know, I'm kind of chronicling my first year as an entrepreneur. And I know you have, you know, been an entrepreneur for a long, long time, considerably longer than I have. But I wanted to just you talk about an incident, and it's one of my favorite stories about you, is you got a job. You got your dream job.
Oh, yeah.
Working. And you had a kind of a similar epiphany as I did. Didn't take you 16 years to get there. But you had a similar epiphany about, you know, doing what you love versus, you know, this job and what it meant. So talk a little bit about your choice to leave stability and go back out into the entrepreneurial world.
That happened I got my dream job. It was at WDRB as the creative director. But before that, I was lucky to be there at all. Like I had no business being there because I have no experience in television. I've never been to school for film, nothing like that, none of that nature. So I didn't deserve to be there in the first place. So I was very lucky to be there as is. That was my dream job. That was the pinnacle for me. I really wanted to do that because prior to that, I only have an eighth grade education. I've been homeless. I never really had anything in my life. My family history does not trend towards success. Or education or anything of that nature. So I was lucky to be at WDRB anyways with that kind of title at an executive level. I was very fortunate for that. However, I was still doing video on the side, and I'm passionate about that, you know, so I still got to do my passion, but I also got to do my passion for my pay, which was super cool. However, at some point you have to make a decision because you might get too busy, and then you might realize that time is more important than money, and you might realize that if I lost all of this, if I lost this house, these cars, all everything I got, would my family still love me? Would my animals still love me? Would my wife still love me? Would it change anything if I lost all this shit? Can I cuss on this podcast?
Yeah, absolutely.
just to pursue my passion further, and to me, I realized that overall happiness was more important than anything. Not that I was not happy at WDRB, the Fox affiliate here. I was very happy about that. I was so lucky, you know, to do that. But here's what got me. So my daughter drew a picture at school, and it had my wife in it, my cat was in it, my dog was in it, my other daughter was in it, and I'm not in the picture. And I said, baby, where's your daddy? And she looked at me like, I should definitely know this already. And she said, well, you're at work. And I was like, whoa, you know, that got me big time, man. So I realized that that was her expectation of me. I was just the guy that was not home, or the guy who was on the computer, maybe, you know. I mean, I've always considered myself a great dad, but that was a really telling blow, you know. And I think that kids will tell you exactly what they want and need out of you, sometime indirectly, but you have to listen for those things, you know. And they're great listeners, and they're great imitators, but you have to give them something really great to imitate. So I knew that at this point, it was a very pivotal point in my life. I had to choose. So I said, well, I really love my job, but I really love my passion. And I've got to choose one. So I've got to make more time for my daughter. So I said, well, I'll choose one. And that question came up again. What if I lost all my shit? If I lost my house, I lost my cars, will my kids love me the same if I lose all that stuff? And the answer was yes. So I was like, what if I have to sell my house and move in this tiny apartment? Will that change anything? Their love for me? No. They don't, because they don't give a fuck about any of that stuff. They care about you. You know, that's all they want is your presence. You know, I said it earlier in the podcast, you know, you don't have to give us presents, just give us your presence, right? So it's kind of the same. It goes full circle. But yeah, man, so I just wanted to give them more of my presence. So I chose. And a lot of people probably said that I was a stupid idiot for leaving my dream job. And it was a lot of money, and the people were great, and they were voted best place to work in Kentucky numerous times in a row. But I left for my passion, because I that's what drove me, and that's what made me happy. And I think that overall, I realized that happiness should be above money, should be above just about anything. I define success by happiness. So I don't give a shit about money at all. However, if you're happy, there's a lot of money on that path. If you're happy and you're doing what you love and you're putting your passion out into the world, then you will get money. Money is inevitably going to come to you, because you're doing what you love and you're doing great at it. It's going to come no matter what, whatever it is. If it wasn't video, it could be, if I was passionate about something else, I would just do that, and I'd be very, and I'd put my all into that thing. But if you can give everything your all and love it for the grind, you know, like with film, we talked about this before, but with film, I'm in love with the grind. I'm in love with people abandoning me on the project and finding new people, and people telling me no and calling places for them just to hang up on me. If you're not in love with that stuff, it's going to be very difficult to make a successful film. If you're in love with, oh my God, Antonio, that was a great film. Oh my God, Antonio, I can't wait to see your film. If you're in love with that, then that's different than loving the grind of the production, which is something that you love too. Yes. You love the grind. And I love the grind. A lot of people don't like that part of it. They love the reception.
Yeah. I used to do a lot of actor training, and we used to train actors. And one of the things we always tell them is, you know, if you're here to be a celebrity, you're not going to make it. If you're here to be a star, that's not what it's about. It's about the craft and the doing of it. And, you know, it's interesting you bring up happiness to that level, because during the film, and you kind of remarked that I can't believe he had time to do a podcast in the middle of this movie. And it was just a little one, but I just had this moment, and I think it was our first day when we got to the location. We're going to talk about this movie here, because it was a doozy in some points. But we got to that location the first day. It's freezing cold. We've been in a nice warm places the first 2 days, and everything was great. And we get to this cold room, and I'm sitting there freezing. I'm sitting behind my monitor. I'm trying to keep warm. Everything's going crazy. And I'm looking at this monitor, and I just started smiling like an idiot. And I think Silas looked at me, and Silas was our second AD on the project, and he's looking at me like I'm nuts. And I was just so unbelievably happy. It's I'm here. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. I couldn't be happier in that moment. So it was just something that really hit me. And it was actually the moment after leaving my job that I was like, okay, I made the right choice. Now, 20 times since then, I've wondered if I made the right choice.
Yeah.
But I know that I have to keep barreling forward.
I'll tell you something really cool that one of my best friends, he's a rapper, his name's Buckshot. He's been doing it a long time. And when I first met him, my very first meeting with him, he took me out to eat, and we were going to work on a project together. And he said, I said, so, man, what's your dream, like, with this stuff? Like, what do you want to get out of it? You know, he's been doing it 25 years now. And he said, I'm living my dream right now. Like, I'm living it. And, like, that was it. Like, he didn't need nothing more. He didn't need to sell a million albums. He sold a lot in his days, but he didn't need to sell. He didn't need to go triple platinum, nothing. He said, this is enough for me. Like, this is it. I'm in love with this. Like, I'm living my dream currently. Like, I don't need anything more. And I thought that was so cool, man. It made me change my perception on everything when he told me that. I've quoted him a million times on it, but I thought it was super cool.
So let's just talk about One Must Fall a little bit. How was the experience of making your first feature? I mean, you've done shorts, you've done videos, weddings. I mean, you've cut feature-length things. But what was it like to do a feature film that not only you directed, but you wrote and produced, and you know, you've carried this child all the way through. You were the dad of this film.
Yeah.
So what was that like?
It's cradle to the grave with everything, with me and you. But I tell you that I couldn't have done it without you, first of all. Like, I mean, my first piece of advice would be, like, get an excellent first AD and protect that person. But that's going to be hard to find. But I'll tell you that most people are afraid to make their first feature, deathly afraid of it, just like me. I was very scared, and it felt like I had to slay this, like, monstrous dragon. But Lloyd Kaufman, I've been talking to him for a few years, and he told me it's not it's just your first feature. He said, it's not your last one. It's just a feature. It's just your first one. It's not going to be your last one. So don't treat it like that, you know, because we all think it's got to be this high stakes thing that, like, you got to put all into. And you should. You should do all those things. But you should not let that deter you from actually doing it, because you can only research so much and you can only listen to a million podcasts. And you could go down that rabbit hole and listen to them forever and then feel like I'm not ready. Just do it. You know, like, the script is never going to be final, ever. It's never going to be final. You just got to put it to bed one day and be like, I'm freaking doing it, and put your flagpole in it and do it, you know? Because I think that's what kept me from doing it for so long. But my wife is so awesome. She always gives me that leverage and that space. And she, you know, pushed me to it. And a lot of my friends, like you and John Wells and a bunch of my really close friends, Lee Kuyper, Dorian Washington, been pushing me for years to do it. But my wife was like, all right, listen, you need to write this film. So I'm going to take the kids to Florida on a family vacation. You will stay here and you will write this film. I'm going to give you a week. So I did. And I wrote the film in a week. And then I, you know, touched it up and revised it for 7 months or something like that. But I think that you need that kind of push, or else if you're like I was and, like, so scared to do it, so scared to commit, I'm just going to do another short film. And then you wind up spending a ton of money on this short film. Just make a freaking feature, man. Just make a feature. Like, if that's what you want to do, if your only goal is to make shorts forever, you know. But if your goal is to make a feature, do not be scared of that. You know, just move forward, move into it. And then do what Lloyd told me, you know, write it based on your resources, what you already have access to, things like that, you know, what you know you can get. So I went through Paint Factory and I walked through there and I'm like, okay, there's a bed in here. I'm going to write a scene with a bed and this old and decrepit, and I'm going to write a scene about this and write a scene. So I took notes and I just wrote about what I had access to.
And then the bed disappeared.
Yeah, they did take the bed away. So then we were like, oh, what do we do about the bed? Because I wrote something based on that bed that was in there. But
but I think that was the glorious thing about having, you know, surrounding yourself with the people that you did, is you had people that were able to also walk around and come up with a very cogent and very plausible solution that worked extremely well. I think it actually worked better than the bed at the end.
Oh yeah, I think that, you know, like those guys in art and you and just people coming up with ideas who have experience, I think you have to listen to everybody, man. And I think that, you know, sometimes people get to, you know, very headstrong about their stuff, and I think that you should protect your vision. I think all those things. But I think that also you should not dismiss people's ideas or make them gun shy so that they're so afraid to give you an idea. You have to welcome those ideas and then just say, you know, we'll try it. If even if you don't want to do it, just tell them, you know, we'll try to work that in, or tell them why, you know, you can't do that. But listen to all ideas, man. Like, I think that that's why everything went so smoothly and we were able to, you know, get, you know, the script as far as we did, because we were listening to ideas and we weren't so, like, you know, pretentious that we were like, oh, you know, my idea is the best. And no, those ideas will not work. And maybe sometime they do have great ideas, man. And listen to it, you know. And I mean, I get people trying to protect their vision. You know, you should do that for sure. But on the same token, don't make people so gun shy to state their opinion either. You know, that's only going to help the film. I look at it like being like a boxer or something. Like, you're training, and then you notice that you keep getting caught with this overhand right over and over and over. You're going to the championship fight. Well, just fix it in the gym, you know, or else you're going to go to this championship fight. You're probably going to lose in front of everybody, get knocked out by the overhand right. You should have fixed it in the gym. So if you can fix it, you know, before in pre-production, and then you go out and you film your thing, then you're not going to get knocked out and lose the championship. You know, you're going to make an awesome film. So
that's awesome. So what was your favorite part of making this film?
Oh, man, I have too many favorite parts. And I would also, you know, give this advice to always enjoy it. You know, it's tough to enjoy it through the when the machine is working. But you have to, you know, take a step back and look at things. And I mean, if you look at any photos from One Must Fall, I'm always glowing. I'm always happy, even if everybody else around me is sad. But so my favorite part of it, I don't know. That's a great question. But I think watching the machine work and come to life was probably my favorite part of it. I mean, nothing could have, you know, got me off track because I was so happy the whole time. So all of it, man, from start to finish, cradle to the grave, it's been awesome. And I love every single part of it. So even pre-production, the writing process, our meetings, you know, filming it, all of it. I love all of it, man. There's not a part, even when, like I said, there's a lot of people that dropped out on us, which is common feeling to me. I've been abandoned my whole life. So very common feeling to me. And when people started dropping out of the project, it was common. I just expect that, you know. But I even love that. I even love finding their replacements. I love talking shit about those people, you know. I love all of it, man. You got to love it all. And the people that did stay, man, I was so thankful because so many times in my life, I mean, my family has pretty much abandoned me. So I mean, I know it so that I'm so close to that feeling already. So for people to actually stay means so much to me, man. So I was very grateful to those people, you know, and not even for them just to stick around, but also for like believing in the project. That was really beautiful to see that and witness that. And I'm just very lucky that, you know, to have those people on board.
Cool. So what would you do differently? Now, you've been away from it now. We've actually done some pickup shots. Looking back on the bulk of production, what's, you know, one or two things that you have learned that you won't repeat and you would also advise people on their first feature or their first projects to not do?
I would say that maybe just it's tough because like timing is the most tough thing, you know, and we shot a very ambitious effects heavy, practical effects heavy film. We wanted all of like the kills and stuff to take place right on camera, like no cutaway bullshit. Like we wanted it to go down. So that is very difficult and ambitious, but I would say that, we shot for 11 days straight. It'd probably be best to give somebody a break in between in there somewhere. That's probably my only thing because, we were starting to wear so thin, you know, and even if like we can work 30 hours straight, we need to give our crew and cast a bit of a break, you know, and I think that's the only thing that I would like to have done, but I thought it was going to be light work. I was like, this is light work, you know, this will be easy, but, because we've done so many things like that before, but it was very difficult and, timing was very tough. So, that's the only thing I'd say, just give yourself enough time, but time is money too. So if you have to raise more money, then raise more money. I was just in a situation where I got the money and people were offering me more, but I was like, I don't want to take on that much money. It was just too risky and I just didn't want to let anybody down and disappoint anybody. So I said, just keep your money. Maybe next time, you know, you can throw in on the next one. But for this one, I don't want to take on too much money and spend too much, but I still end up over budget a little bit. So, yeah.
There's more time.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on just a little bit. We're not going to keep this overly long, but just as an entrepreneur, what projects sustain you? Like, what is that allows you to stay as a full-time filmmaker, a full-time video production specialist? What are those projects that you find that are your bread and butter?
That's a great question. So it's a kind of like a multitude of things. So for a while, I was doing like a lot of photography for magazines and stuff like that. And I was using that like as, it wasn't my bread and butter, but I used that as pay. And then there was, I do weddings still, and I love doing weddings, but I think, and then I do a bunch of commercial projects and music videos and things like that. I get paid for the most random things sometime. I mean, something comes to my inbox every other day and it's always this bizarre request, but I shoot anything, you know, I'm not above anything. You know, I'd go clean these people's trash. I'd do their landscaping if they allowed me, you know, they're all above me. So I'm just like so thankful they would even give me the shot in the first place. However, I think that you have to price yourself in such a way that you're not going to hate what you're doing. So oftentimes I deal with a lot of other people in my industry. So those people are very bitter sometimes and they're like, oh, you know, complaining about everything. Oh, this client asked for a change and they're so mad, you know? And I'm like, well, did you charge them enough? And they're like, no, no, I'm hooking them up. That's why I'm so mad. And I'm like, well, man, just charge so much that you like won't be mad at them, you know? Like that way it's not fair for either of you if you're mad at them. Like they don't know any different. Like you just charged them. So I set my price based on how much it will take me not to hate what I'm doing. So if I hate what I'm doing, then I won't be passionate about it anymore. And I don't ever want money to dictate my passion. So I think that you should set your price based on this is how much it's going to take me to not hate what I'm doing. Even if a client asks me for changes, even if a client asks me to stay over an hour, build that into your pricing. That way you can always stay passionate about it. And it's never about money. So what my base price is might be different than somebody else's. They might be like, oh, that's a whole lot of money to me, or that's not a lot at all. So it's different based on the job, but I just base all of my prices just based on how much it will take me to not hate what I'm doing. So I still love what I'm doing. That's what it always is. So, you know, if it could, and it varies based on people. If somebody hits me up and they're they're interviewing me for a job, to bid a job or something like that, I'm interviewing them too. They think they're interviewing me, I'm interviewing them also, because I might not want to work with that person. And I might say, I'm not going to work with you no matter how much money you pay me. So that happens to me a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. I've had people who hit me up and they're like, yo, what's your PayPal email address? And I'm like, why? And they're like, because I'm going to put down a deposit for a video. And I'm like, no, you're not. I don't even know you. I haven't even discussed the project. I'm not, no. I want to know what we're doing and what we're talking about, or else, you know, no, I'm not going to do that. So I'll do anything, but money's very low on my priority list. So I care very little about money. I prefer loyalty and good relationship way more over money. I'm not the type of person who'd be like, oh, Herschel's client hit me up and they're going to pay me $5,000 for this 1 hour video. I'm going to go do it. No, I'm not. I would call you and I'd be like, yo, Herschel, your client's hitting me up. I'm just letting you know. I would never take that, because loyalty to me is worth way more than money. However, most people in this industry will find that that's not the case. So
I think one of the things that I know I personally struggle with, and this is the part of the program where I encourage everybody listening to, you know, get a pen and paper out, because, you know, this is the kind of stuff that I need to know. You know, I've struggled, and I know a lot of artists struggle with the idea of charging for their art and how much to charge. And we've had this discussion, you know, somebody says, you know, I need a wedding. Well, I'm going to charge $10,000. Well, you know, most people can't afford a $10,000 wedding video, so yeah, you lose that job. So what would your advice be to somebody who's starting out and they have no idea how to price themselves?
Yeah.
What resources do you go to? Where do you go to look and figure out what a good range is? And droning is a perfect example. I do a lot of drone work. I know some guys that say they won't get their drone out of their bag for under $750 a day, and I know some people that are, you know, give me $50, I'll go fly.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a wide range there. So how do you fight that?
I was talking to two people who gave me amazing advice that I'll never forget. So it's Ryan Armbrust. He owns Louisville Boudoir, I think, is his business.
Or amazing artist.
A sniper photography. He's a great guy. And then I talked to Angela Anderson, and she used to own Feather Whimsy, I think is her name of her business. And she used to shoot wedding photography and boudoir, and she's amazing. And she charged $20,000 a wedding. Well, I was at a wedding, and she goes, how are you getting these weddings? And I was like, what do you mean? And it was a high-end wedding, you know, it was for the Gillespies, who owned the Gillespie downtown. And she goes, it was her last wedding, and she said, how are you getting these weddings? And I said, I don't know. I mean, because I guess I'm pretty good. I guess I'm decent. I don't know. And she's like, no. I'm just curious because you're too cheap. I checked out your website. You're way too cheap. And I said, really? And she's like, yeah, because she's very expensive. And she's like, you know, you need to probably charge a bit more if you're going to get weddings like this, because I don't even know how they're finding you. And I'm like, wow, that made a lot of sense to me. And then Ryan Armbrust said, what's your close rate? I was like, shit, 100%. He's like, what? 100%? Because I was very busy at the time. And he's like, you don't never want to be 100%. I'm like, that didn't make any sense to me. I'm like, why don't I want to be at 100%? He's like, you want to be about 70%. And I'm like, what? I'm like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And he goes, yeah, you want to be about 70% close rate. He said, you have to be too expensive for some people. And dude, that got me good. And I instantly doubled my price. And then I doubled it again and again and again, whatever, because I was very cheap in the beginning. But I doubled it to where it has to be this amount, or else I really don't want to take on a project and the headache of a project. And I'm very passionate about this stuff.
Time away from your family.
Yeah. And for me, like I said, it's cradle to the grave. So I put everything I got in this project. And you know, I'm not just gonna put out anything. So I mean, it's got me in it. So you know, I'm more boutique style now. I don't take on a ton of projects anymore. And if I can't, like yesterday, we had a meeting with somebody, and I told them that you know, I've got to have time, or else I can't give all my all to it. And I don't do anything unless I can give all of my all to it. So I'm not just gonna. If somebody hits me up and they're like, "Hey, I just need 3 or 4 photos." I mean, I don't do photography anymore, but they're like, "Hey, I just need 3 or 4 photos, just some headshots. How much will you charge me?" I'm gonna say, "I'm not the right guy for that." Because, like, I don't, that's not what I do. Like, I get in there and I want to make you look better than you have ever looked in your whole life. And if there's a better photo, a better photographer than me took, I want to beat that. I want to try my best to beat that photo. And, like, I'll use that as my bar, you know, my standard. And that's what I want to do. I don't want people to be like, "Hey, I just need, like, this little thing done. Can you come and shoot it?" And I'm like, no, that's not what I do. So, you know, I mean, I think that you just need to find what you do, what you want to do, who your audience is, and then you got to market specifically to that audience. And some people have different audiences than, you know, you have different audience than I have. Like other people look at your stuff that might hate all of my stuff, you know? So I think that it's all based on preference, and you got to find that audience and market to those. Yeah. And I think that, you know, here's a perfect example. The movie Hannibal was beaten by Piranha Sharks in the box office. And you're like, not Piranha Sharks, I'm sorry. That's John Wells' movie. Sharknado. Sharknado. It was beaten by... So Hannibal was beaten in sales by Sharknado, and you're like, what? How is that possible? Hannibal's like written by like the best writers and director, but it doesn't matter because it found an audience. And sometimes finding an audience is more important than, you know, quality, because who's to say, you know, people on the radio might not be the best singers, but they have a great audience. And like my buddy Dorian always says, he's like, they don't sign artists based on talent anymore. They sign it based on audience. So I think you just got to find your audience and connect with those people directly. And then as far as from a pricing perspective, you just got to see what that market will yield. And you got to do your research and try things, you know, and set your own standard, because nobody can tell you how much you are worth. I've had people who tried to before, mm-hmm. who were like, "Yo, can you come and film this thing?" And I'm like, "Well, this is how much I am per hour." And they're like, "That's not worth it. I don't know directors in LA that make da 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 da." And I'm like, "Well, that's what I charge and that's what I get." So,
you're part of my 30%.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, sorry, man. Like, you can't tell me that. Like, no one can tell me that. No one can tell you that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if that's your price, then you can't let somebody dictate that price. That's yours. That's the price you put on yourself. And sometimes that's just an indicator of how well you think you've done and what you deserve. So nobody can tell you your price.
Yeah. I've had almost everybody from you to, you know, filmmakers all over the city tell me my prices are way too low, and I've had a lot of struggles getting them up. And I've had one person tell me that my prices were too high, and I like listened politely, and they had some good advice. And I was just like, no, my prices are right where they need to be right now. And probably still a little low, but you know, I'm still building my clientele list. So yeah. Very, very good advice. What's the best piece of filmmaking advice that you could give?
That's a tough question, man. That's a great question too. I think that just, sometimes we get a lot more credit sometimes than we deserve maybe. But it takes an entire team. And I think that you need to, make sure that those people are taken care of from like a morale perspective, that while you might be receiving these accolades for that, you have got to deter that and give that to the people who deserve it also. Like, you can't be like, "Oh, I'm taking all of it. I'm taking all the praise." Like, I see people do that all the time. And then I go back and I look and I'm like, "Well, you just directed the movie. Like, you didn't write it. You didn't do this. You didn't shoot it." You need to give those people, their credit as well. And like, there's so many people who like, I owe credit to, who sometimes don't get the spotlight right on them and don't get the platform, and they deserve it. And there's a lot of them on this, this film that deserve that. And I can mention them in the notes as well, but there's so many people who make these things come to life. And I think that my biggest piece of advice is ensure that those people are, even if you don't mention it on a podcast, make sure that those people know how appreciated they are on-set, off-set, you know, random messages. Maybe it's with money. However that you like to take care of those people, ensure that those people are taken care of, because sometimes we get too much praise as directors or photographers or whatever. And I always deter that and I say, well, trust me, it took a lot. It's not just me. I walked in and I pushed a button when I take a photo and I do a little bit of editing, but the real talent is, you know, the model and the makeup artist, the hairstylist and the creative director, if that they were there or whatever. So, you know, I think that just that's my biggest piece of advice. And then secondly, just shoot, like just go do it, you know, like immediately. If you want to do something, you'll find a way. And if you don't, you'll find an excuse. Uh-huh. And, you know, if you're not doing it, then listen to yourself. You'll start making excuses why that you're not doing this thing. But if you want to do it, you'll do it, you know? And, yeah,
it's that old saying, you know, you can think you can, or you think you can't. Either way, you're right.
Yeah. So true, man. So true.
It's actually the same piece of advice years ago, when I really first started the podcast, I talked to John Carpenter. I was at a show and I was actually photographing all the celebrities that year. And he points to his Big Trouble in Little China tattoo. But I actually got to photograph John Carpenter, and it was amazing. Oh, and I got to pull him aside very, very quickly when he was actually getting ready to leave for the airport. And I was like, you know, what piece of advice would you give, you know, young filmmakers? And I talked about this on the podcast years ago, but he said, just do it. The technology is such that anybody can do it. If you've got the idea, you've got the passion, you've got the drive, just go do it. And that's something that I've really tried to put into my own work, and that I also try to instill in everybody that I teach and I listen to. So where can we find out more about you, sir? Like, what's your social media presence, your websites?
I would give mine out, but I think that if you're interested in filmmaking, you should just go visit Renegade Art Productions and just ignore me completely, because those guys are doing some really great things. So, no, thank you. Go check out Herschel's work, because if you're listening to this and you have not seen it, I would go check that out. Don't worry about me, because my stuff, I hate all of it. So check out Herschel's, because he's amazing and he actually does
it
good.
I don't know any artist who does it. Well, actually, I do know some artists that love their own work and they should really check themselves. But, you know, I think that's again, you know, an interesting problem that a lot of truly talented people have is they hate everything they do. They're always chasing the better version of themselves.
Yeah.
So I just want to thank you for taking some time to sit down and talk with us. It's always educational. It's always inspiring. So thank you for being you, and thank you for having me on your project.
You.
I can't tell you how much I needed to work on a film, especially where I was and how much that meant to me. So
thank you. I couldn't have done it without you, honestly.
I appreciate it. All right, guys, that's going to about wrap it up for this episode. If you have a podcast topic suggestion, a guest suggestion, or anything you want to hear me talk about, please send me an email to filmaspire@live.com. And until next time, this is Herschel Zahn, Film Aspire Podcast. Make sure you get out there and tell your story.